Ramsey Solutions presents Chris Brown's True Stewardship.
What if American households today got serious about stewardship? Not some old historic church word and not some fundraising campaign, but true biblical stewardship, managing God's blessings God's way for God's glory.
Welcome to Chris Brown's True Stewardship. Here's your host, Chris Brown.
Well, hello, folks. I'm coming to you from the headquarters of Ramsey Solutions. This is Chris Brown's True Stewardship, where we talk about the good, the bad, and the not-so-brilliant things that we do in life and with money. We are reclaiming stewardship. God has a lot to say about money and a lot about living this life intentionally for His glory. Much more about that at stewardship.com. Be sure to check it out. Again, that's stewardship.com. This is your show, America. Phone lines are open, 866-357-3283. Again, that's 866-357-3283. You call in and we will talk about any of these subjects, anything that has to do with stewardship at all, anything about money and how that affects other areas of our lives. So make sure you call in and we'll chat. Our first caller is Alyssa calling in from Phoenix, Arizona. Alyssa, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I saw Phoenix on here, and I got to tell you the story. You have two Phoenix airports, don't you?
Yeah, there's a small one in the East Valley.
Yeah, this is a little bit of a heads up to all of our listeners. If you're ever in Phoenix, make sure that you are going to the right Phoenix airport. That's all I got to say about that. But that was a tragic day in my life. And this is just kind of some therapy over the airwaves. So thank you all for listening to that. But that was a brutal story that was very embarrassing. But that's not why you called. How can I help you?
Okay, well, my husband and I have had a little disagreement.
A discussion.
A misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. Anyways, yeah. We have a student loan worth $1,000.
Okay.
And that's left. It was a $5,000 student loan that we took out to pay off a motorcycle when
okay.
he was in the school. But then, and that was the only one. And so we've been paying on it for 8 years or so.
Okay.
And just a $50 a month payment, and because the interest is only at like 1.9% or something, it's just really low interest mm-hmm. on it. So we're working on our emergency fund. We've never really been in debt. We've never had car payments or credit card or anything like that. We've had this one debt hanging over our head. And we're at our emergency fund is at about $9,000 right now, and I want to pay it off, and he would like to just keep it because I think we paid like $12 in interest last year on this student loan, and he said he'd rather have the money in the bank as a, you know, just in case, than because it's a house payment, basically. If something were to happen to him or his job or something, that's one more month that we would be able to make our house payment. So that's our disagreement. I want to pay it off, and
yeah.
he doesn't.
Alyssa, this one's an easy one. Pay that sucker off. Get it out of your life. I'm on your side. And so you can okay. tell him that bluntly. Chris said he's on my side. He's not on your side. I'm just kidding. Don't be that direct. You don't want to start another fight. Yes. So here's the deal. You guys paid more than that in interest. $50 a month times 12 months is $600 a year. And you did that for 8 years. You paid $4,800. You got $1,000 left. That's $5,800, which means you've paid $800 in interest when you didn't need to. Would you just give $800 to a bank, like just go down the street and give $800 to a bank? You wouldn't do that. And that's exactly what you guys have done over the last 8 years. Don't do that. You're paying $100 a year in interest, not $12 a year in interest. His calculation is wrong. So how do you get him to be on your side? Because your side is the good side. He's on the dark side. You're on the good side, right?
I've been working on him. He's finally starting to, we've been budgeting together, and he's good with the cash system, but
yeah.
It's been baby steps.
Alyssa, is he a believer?
He is.
Okay, so check this out. Hebrews 4:12. I don't know how often you are exposed to this particular passage, but it says, "For the word of God is alive and active, sharper than any double-edged sword. It penetrates even to dividing soul and spirit, joints and marrow. It judges the thoughts and attitudes of the heart. I would tell him the scriptures. Proverbs 22:7 says, the borrower is enslaved to the lender. Get that out of your life. In Romans, it talks about, owe no man anything. And so that means even a $1,000 student loan. Now, that happens to not work because of the maybe the stage of life he's in. First of all, you know, sometimes there's a paper cut. You get a paper cut, you don't realize it right away, but man, it stings later. And so let that sword do its deal. There'll be a little cut there, and let that those scriptures, you don't throw them in his face and cause a fight, but expose them to him subtly and make sure he knows those passages. Maybe it's time to sit down and read a book together, TMMO, or maybe go through Financial Peace University. TMMO, for our listeners, is Total Money Makeover, a book that's sold millions and millions and millions of copies and helped a lot of people. But those would be the avenues I would go. Listen, don't try to force him. Try to inspire him. I say that often. Inspire him. And he is totally wrong on this one. You've got to get that student loan out of your life. I'm on your side. And you know, let's talk to those city officials about those two different airports, okay?
All right. I'll try to get that done for you.
Good. Does that answer your
much.
Question?
It does. I loved it, the answer. It was great.
I bet you did. All right. Thank you, Alyssa.
Thanks.
All right. I got an email here from Elvira in Seattle, Washington. She says, hi, Chris. I am so glad I can listen to your show. I have a question and was hoping you can answer it on air. It seems that between our Christian community, being wealthy and wanting to be wealthy is looked down upon. To think and plan on growing wealth is not good. Luke chapter 12, Jesus talks about not worrying about storing up wealth. In the Bible, just to name a few, Job was very wealthy and a righteous man. Abraham was also very wealthy and a man of God. Jacob was also very wealthy and blessed by God. And Solomon was also very wealthy, blessed by God with wisdom and many riches. And he is the one that wrote Proverbs, where many Bible verses on managing your money are found. The Bible says that like Solomon, there was never such a wise man and will never be after him. Would you please talk about how to be wealthy but not get greedy or not make a god out of your money? Basically, how to be wealthy, righteous person. Great question. Great point. Folks who attack wealth drive me insane. Absolutely insane. Did you know that we're told to be successful our entire life? You want to be successful. You're going to be successful one day. I'm telling you, I can see it in your eye. You've got to persevere. You are going to be successful. And then when you get older and you're successful, you've got this pocket of people that says you're not supposed to be successful. That's crazy. That is crazy. Did you guys know that we're all wealthy? I mean, those of you that are listening to this show, if you're on a radio, chances are you are wealthy. Did you know that if you make more than $11,000 a year, you're in the top 14% of the world's wealth? If you make more than $34,000 a year, you're in the top 1% of the world's wealth. You're all wealthy. Now, there might be a few of you that are below those levels, but let's say that you're making $9,000. You're still wealthy. You're in the top 20% of the world's wealth. We're told to be successful forever, and then we finally are, and it's a bad thing. Now, what Elvira talks about of making money your god, yes, that's an issue. But is wealthy wrong? Very, very not true. Here's the key. Whether you know whether wealthy is wrong or right, your motives. Are you wealthy for you, or are you wealthy for God's glory? There is the answer. That is what we need to examine in our own hearts. Are we wealthy and successful so that we can buy more stuff, so that we can feel more important, so we can work on our self-esteem because our identity? No. Are we wealthy so that we can live and give like nobody else, bringing glory to God's name? Again, you're listening to Chris Brown's True Stewardship, and from the great city of Columbia, South Carolina, we've got Tracy calling in. Tracy, how are you?
I'm wonderful, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How can I help you?
Well, my husband and I, we are 25 and 27, and we are debt-free, and we have three small children. And my husband is in nuclear construction. He has a degree in construction management. And while he works in nuclear construction, we are wanting to start our own family business. of doing the real estate or real estate and like flipping homes side of construction.
Okay.
Again, he has his degree in construction management, and so he has the financial know-how, as well as he put himself through school working for another company that did the work, and so he has the physical labor know-how as well. We're debt-free, and we're on baby step number 3, and we want to know kind of where it fits in the baby steps and kind of the best way to go about it.
Yeah. How much money do you have saved up?
Not much. We did FPU in this past winter, and then so we just got debt-free 2 months ago, and so we're currently putting away about 25% of our paycheck, so we've got about $5,000 saved up, and we're working towards 20.
Okay. So if you were going to be flipping homes, that means that you'd be borrowing.
That's kind of what we want to know. Like, would we bought, like, we follow Dave Ramsey's principles, and so we try to stay debt-free, but if it's the business side, would we be borrowing money, or should we try to go with the foreclosure, good deal, very cheap route?
Let me tell you a little story that I'm familiar with. It's my story.
Okay.
The year was 2008. Do you remember that what happened in 2008? It's called a recession.
It was a recession.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was ugly. And the recession happened because of people like me. I would have called in and almost word for word said exactly what you just said. I would have said, I want to go into flipping homes. The opportunity's right. I've got some construction connections. I was 31 at the time. Made sense to me. Had 2 kids. I was debt free. And everything had worked in my personal life. But somehow, I had justified not carrying it over to the business side. As if the scriptures only applied to my personal life, but they don't apply to business. And I'm not throwing stones at you, Tracy. I'm talking about me. I'm talking about what I did. Mm-hmm. I did this. So I went out and I borrowed $1 million for 8 homes.
Wow.
I'm like, why would you flip one home when you can flip 8? Hello. That just makes sense, right? I mean, why would you want to make $30,000 off one house when you can make $30,000 off of 8 houses? I mean, it's just basic ROI on your time, right? Well, 2008 hit and couldn't rent any of those homes and couldn't sell any of those homes. And for the next 36 months, I paid nearly $10,000 a month on 8 vacant homes. Every month came by and boom, boom, boom. I'm just dropping payments. And I'm also dropping my esteem. I'm dropping my dignity. I'm dropping my ability to be able to serve people. And I'm dropping my encouragement level. I'm dropping my will to even survive. It was not good. It was not pretty. And in January of 2011, I looked a trustee in the eye and I said, I can't pay. It was a filled courtroom. And I looked her in the eye and I said, I can't pay. I still remember what it feels like. I can still remember the way I felt. And Tracy, anything I can do to tell you to not do this, I don't know how to jump through the microphone and put my arm around you, but I'm asking you, don't do this.
So I guess another question would be the best way to go about becoming self-employed.
Yeah.
When we have a fairly good income right now from what he has, and how to work that into our baby steps.
I'm all about you becoming self-employed when you have the cash to do it. When you have the capital, start off capital, and the self-employment, the opportunity doesn't grow unless there's cash there. So you don't reinvest back into
right.
the company unless you have cash. So
we want to know where it fits in our baby steps with saving for ourselves as well as saving for a business.
Yeah. It happens after you pay off your house. So it's after baby step 6.
Okay.
Make sure that you're doing the retirement, the safe, stable investing, the growth stock mutual fund, a Roth IRA, your matching 401 at your work, and you're maximizing that. Because at age 25 and 27, when you're doing $100 a month, that's going to come out to $1.7 million roughly for over 40 years. And if you do like a full car payment, $486 a month, which is the average car payment in America, that comes out to over $5.6 million at age 65. You're young. And compound interest is the 8th wonder of the world, Einstein says. So take advantage of that. And man, that's money where you're not having to go out there and rip up the carpet. You're not having to go out there and paint the stairs. You're not having to go out there and paint the redo the baseboards. That's just money making money on money. And it's doing it for you while you're on the back porch sipping a lemonade. So that's what I would do. I would do the save 15%. And, you know, don't jump off. You know, Dave says all the time that if you jump off the roller coaster, those are the only people that ever get hurt. So stay on the roller coaster through the highs and the lows through the whole 40 years. You'll be very, very happy. So then pay off that house, then start toying around with, oh, maybe we should flip if we have the cash. Well, folks, we're talking about living smart. Now is the perfect time to start living smart with your money. You need a plan that works. Financial Peace University offers practical and easy-to-follow steps that have helped over 2.5 million families get out of debt and learn how to handle money God's way. You can take Financial Peace University in a local class, as a home study, or online. Take the first step towards changing your future with Financial Peace University and visit stewardship.com. That's stewardship.com. Or you can call us at 866-357-3283. You're listening to Chris Brown's True Stewardship. If you have a question for Chris, email him at chrisonair@stewardship.com. That's chrisonair@stewardship.com. Or call him at 866-357-3283. That's 866-357-3283. And now let's continue with Chris Brown's True Stewardship. Here's Chris. We'd love to hear from you. Love to hear how you can get some hope today. Get some encouragement today. The phone lines are open. Our next caller is Roy, calling in from Dallas, Texas. Roy, how are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I am very thankful. How can I help you today?
The situation that I'm in now is I have a car loan out, and my car was totaled, and I didn't have gap insurance.
And just let me for a second, Roy, I want to fill everybody in on what gap insurance is. You hit on that quickly, and I want to just talk about it just for a second for everybody, just to get everybody on the same page. And gap insurance is also called, you know, gap protection or totaled insurance, and it covers the difference between how much you owe and how much your car is worth. And so for most Americans, standard, you know, insurance is fine. But if your car is totaled, your standard insurance will not pay for the difference between the car's worth and how much you owe on it. So you're in a sense upside down.
My question was, my balance is 2524. They offered me a $1,500 settlement. Or should I just pay the balance off?
Are they saying that's going to affect your credit score, or is that something that they want it real quick? Or
it will definitely bring my credit score down if I take the settlement.
Okay, so there is penalties. Here's what my philosophy on credit score in general. Okay, and this is for all of our listeners also, is that I don't want people to rely on a credit score. I don't want them to the credit score. It's this false identity that we're important because we have a high score, and we're not important if we have a low score. And really all it means is your ability to be able to borrow, your ability to pay interest. If you get an 800 credit score, it means you're amazing at paying interest. Yay, big deal. You know, if you got a low credit score, it's that you haven't done well. But the whole idea, the whole FICO situation, the whole credit score situation is just crazy. You're not even in the system because you don't borrow money, because borrowing is not brilliant. And so I'm not worried about your credit score. Now, whether you are and whether you plan to borrow in the future, that's up to you. I like the settlement. If that's what they're offering, why not? Now, if you feel like, I don't know all the variables, if there's some kind of integrity issue where you feel like you owe them $25,24, then I would pay that. Because at the end of the day, 3 years from now, that little $1,000 savings is not worth you losing integrity, losing sleep over the fact that you did the wrong thing. So you got to ask the Lord, you got to pray, and you got to ask, hey, listen, God, is this something that should I pay the $25,24? That's between you and God thing. I've been in scenarios before where I took the settlement. I felt like God said, hey, they offered that to you. They're happy with that. They're cool with that. The other scenarios where I felt like they were very frustrated with me, and they said, if you take the settlement, we're just offering this to you just because you're driving us nuts. This is back in my 08 days where I was really struggling, and I've kind of pulled out of that, thank God, and putting into practice all the biblical concepts that we teach here on the show. But for $1,000, I don't think it's worth it, man. I don't think it's worth you knowing that you skipped out on something that you owe. So the bigger teaching here is to not put yourself in a scenario where you're upside down on a car. And let me talk a little bit about probably the four different ways that our listeners can avoid being upside down. These are the four characteristics that are really behind somebody being upside down on their car. And the first one is when you accept an extended term. So if you go in and you get financing on an extended term, you're probably going to be upside down before you blink. Another one is depreciation. Some cars depreciate 30% in 3 months. Think about that. 30% of their value in 3 months. The average car in America loses 70% of its value in the first 4 years. So depreciation is just nasty. Another way is putting little money down or no money down. That's setting yourself up for being upside down. And the last one is, you know, borrowing more than the car is worth. You're borrowing for the tags and you're borrowing for the registration. And you're borrowing for all the other fees and you're throwing all that into the loan. So that's more for our listeners. Roy, I wanted everyone to be on the same page, how to avoid this scenario. I would pay the whole thing. That's just me, my friend. I would work hard. I would cut in some other spots. I would pay the whole thing and I would learn my lesson. It's not worth the you not sleeping well at night in a month. But if you do feel like they offer that as an acceptable option and you feel good about it, then go for it.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your call, Roy. All right, another email here from Amy. She says, my husband and I are trying to find a church in our area. We've been looking for a few months, and while we look, we have not been giving a tithe. Is it okay to wait to tithe until we find our home church? I say you put it aside. You put aside the tithe. You set it apart. You put it apart. It's your first fruits. You set it apart. And the Bible says in Malachi 3:10, the local storehouse. Well, if you haven't found a local storehouse, just put it aside. And then when you join a local community, a local church, a local parish, then you tithe that entire amount. But that look for a local church shouldn't take 9 months, shouldn't take 2 years, shouldn't take a long period of time. But if it's a couple months and you want to put that aside and give one big tithe when you get there, I've got no problems with that. This is Chris Brown's True Stewardship. Up next is Reed calling in from Indianapolis. How can I help you?
I'm a first-time home buyer. I'm 23 years old. And I got a letter in the mail from my mortgage company about doing a biweekly option for my mortgage to save on interest and all kinds of things like that. Being a first-time home buyer, not really having anybody to talk to about these things, I was just curious, I mean, is this a good route to take to do the biweekly option, or should I just stay on the monthly?
What are they charging to do it? Like $14 a month or like $500?
Well, my mortgage payment now is $1,032 a month.
Uh-huh.
If they split it up twice, it would be $519 a month plus a $3.50 charge for debiting.
Okay.
So it comes out to be, I think, $11 more than what I'm paying monthly.
All right. Let me tell you the so-called magic behind these biweekly payments. There's nothing wrong with them throwing that out there for you. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with them charging you $11 a month, which it looks like it comes out to about to do this for you. I mean, obviously there's some work on their part. They got to, you know, change some stuff around. There's nothing wrong with it. But here's the deal. Here's the magic behind it. There is none.
Okay.
There's no magic.
There's none.
No. Here's the deal. What you're doing is you're making 26 payments because there's 52 weeks in a year and you're doing it every other week. So really what you're doing is 26 half payments, which is like making 13 monthly payments. So instead of making 12 payments a month or 12 payments a year, you're making 13 payments a year. So what does this really mean? You're making one more payment a year. You can do that on your own. You don't need them to do that. You don't need to pay a fee for that. So $11 a month all year long, that's crazy sauce. You don't need to do that. Just make your extra payment. You know, make an extra two payments, three payments, four payments. At your age, I would be doing that. If you don't have any other debt and you're in a good financial position and you're saving for retirement, I'd start making some double payments at your age and where you're at. So anyway, so yeah, I would go for it. There's nothing wrong with it. On average, you know, a 30-year mortgage gets paid off in like 22.8 years. So it's definitely great. It's a lot faster.
Okay.
Yeah, so hopefully that helps you out, my friend.
All right, yeah, that definitely does. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Well, folks, that wraps up this edition of Chris Brown's True Stewardship, brought to you by Ramsey Solutions. Now, this is normally the point in radio shows where the show host asks you, the show listener, for your financial support. But we're not going to do that. We're here as a free service. But in order to be able to keep providing this free service, we need you to help by telling your friends and your family to, one, listen to the show, two, check out stewardship.com, and three, would you also consider leaving us a review or rating on iTunes? Thank you so much for helping spread the word. It's been an honor to serve you today. And as always, let's stay connected at Chris Brown On Air on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Today, we have been reminded that God has a lot to say about money. So until next time, let's continue to manage His blessings, His way, and for His glory. God bless you.